It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here and declare your independence here in Phoenix, Arizona from the BEA Beautiful. That's the only way I know how to spell beautiful. BEA Beautiful. I think it was Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, helped me with that. You know, I always got that wrong. So I can use it, and you now know how to spell BEA Beautiful. FreedomsPhoenix.com Studios. Now, Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. Lots of good stuff up there. We're going to be it's a special day today. I'm going to share this with you. Yesterday we had a great lively discussion on how we got here. There's always a map. Somebody has a plan, and I'm of the opinion that there were guys with a plan to, get us on the plantation from the beginning. They had the Declaration of Independence, and then they wait till Jefferson's in France, and then they, do this Constitution thing. And there were people, Patrick Henry and Thomas Paine and others are going, but you had the other one, John Adams and Hamilton, especially Hamilton, that, we need to have a collective, man. They're just of that mindset. There are some people that we need it for fill-in-the-blank reason. Oh, by the way, you don't mind if I run it. I mean, that's just, you start creating a new city. You don't want to be annexed by a larger city. You create your own little town and do it in the name of, and the guys do the exact same thing. So what happens is now we're in a situation to where it's obviously outside of whatever original box that they created. So we're going, okay, how do we not repeat it? Well, we had a lively discussion. You go to the archive for yesterday's show, and I gave you guys your best shot. I know Joe Buckley. He's a real activist. He's involved in a lot of the Republican Party things, and we're gonna Tea Party kind of stuff, and we're gonna fix it and get in there and fix it. Get me in and give me power. I'll fix it. And I really genuinely knew that he would be the best advocate for those in the audience here that, want to make sure that the argument for the Constitution was made. And Eric and I both are like, yeah, man, if we go back to 1790s after they did the Constitution with the Bill of Rights, of course, that was the compromise they made with the Anti-Federalists, you have, I'd be all right. I probably wouldn't get off my couch. But it's not the document. It's a philosophy behind it, that you need a central authority, that you need a big, powerful ring. As long as we get to wear it, we're in control of it. It's America. It's American ring. It's got red, white, and blue with stars on a ring. Okay? I'm of the opinion that that attitude, that is what the problem is. That's why it's declare your independence. I'm a declare your independence kind of guy. And, the Declaration of Independence was very clear. It didn't even say what kind of government. It just told you how to recognize when it's gone bad. If it's not defending the rights of individuals, then it's bad. I don't care, what kind of, flowery lace it's got around it. it's them by their fruits. We got some rotten fruit, man. It's bad. So what we're going to do today is this. There's some stuff, the vaccination efforts are still, hitting news, and we'll play some of the clips from that. We're getting some news around the state on that, and we'll push it. But there's a deeper reason why. Jet, the board op, has been in New York on vacation. He's coming back, and it's the last day regularly, where Don and I get to spend time. So we're gonna share our lives with you a little bit. And this will be the first time we've done this, first chance we've had. It'll be fun. You stay tuned.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, and on the board today, Donna Hancock. I talked to Jet. He just got back last night, and he's looking forward to coming back and playing, because he's been playing in New York. In New York City! Yeah, you know, the guy's been having some fun. He went to Ground Zero yesterday before he left. You know, he wanted to go and do that, so he and his wife Beth, yeah, I'm glad they're back. Now, Donna, I forgot to tell you. Friday, he's got something he's got to do in the morning, so we get to do it again Friday. Yay! So, he may stop by here in a little bit, and you'll sleep in, man. Chill. Jet lag. Now, what I wanted to do today, because I've been on the air since February of 2003, and there's been a couple of times Donna has come in on the show before. I remember her coming in, and Donna, you need to put the microphone over there so it's not near that fan on the server thing there. No, that server makes noise. So what happens is we had her in on the show when she and my 17-year-old daughter at the time, she's now 24, and when she was 17, she was graduating high school, and she and my wife went on a self-defense class. Now, it didn't even this part didn't even get the firearms. I mean, it was a shooting club thing, but it was all about, you know, getting away, you know, recognizing danger, don't put yourself in certain situations, how to get, the whole point was, you know, just to get away. And so the 2 days of, man, you know, they put the guy in the rubber suit and you just beat the snot out of him, you know. So, and you go through a lot of different, so it's 16 hours. It's 8 hours a day for 2 days over a weekend. And what better gift to give your beautiful 17-year-old daughter graduating high school? You know, yes, there is a real world out there. And, you know, this private school thing, I don't think prepared you for it. So we'll go through that. And then they came on. And, you know, I'm going to have Rhea come back on sometime, her and her husband, and then, play clips of that. I won't tell them, make fun of her because, you know, she was shy and stuff. But so Donna did a great job. And she's been, and there's limited opportunity that you get to meet the power behind, you know, the voice. Now, my wife without her support, this stuff would never happen. And we've been very active. I mean, when we're filing, you know, challenging 44 election laws all the way to the Ninth Circuit, guess who's doing the typing? You know, and when we have all and the spell checking, boy, that was very important. Now, what happens is we have evolved, and it's a good story. It's a good example. And if you go on YouTube and you did Ernest Hancock with no space, it'll go to my page, or you can just do Ernest Hancock Tennessee Libertarian Convention or something. They asked me to come and speak to their convention because the people that put on the convention, the Libertarian Convention in Tennessee, were the same people that did the Revolution March in Washington, D.C., which I emceed along with Gary Franchi from Restore the Republic, which was the group started by Aaron Russo around the America from Freedom to Fascism movie, which we've done tens of thousands of copies of. I mean, you know, we make sure that gets out. Now, what was shared at that was over 2 hours. It was like 2.5 hours. Tell us your story. I'm like, okay, you asked for it, you know, and when the head start nodding, you let me know. So it was entertaining, but it was a chronological from, you know, I was born in 61, and then you go through of all the things that, you know, how the media impacted me, when you made a decision to become an activist, why, what was it that happened? And as you go through this, a lot of, certainly people in there that are already activists, they go, yeah, I went through that. There was a time. You know, something. And do you think that we're creating more activists? You know, are circumstances such and things that they're starting to become activists? Not concerned Americans, not even informed Americans, not even, you know, kind of I'm aware of, yeah, there's something wrong. My cousin's former roommate's girlfriend told me about it. Okay. I mean, that, not that. I mean that you have set down the six pack, got up off of your lazy chair, and are doing something. What? Do you know where to go? What to do? And whatever it is that you do, a lot of times, you know, you get invested in something. You're more invested in whatever the relationships or the friends or whatever than what you're. I'll give you a perfect example. Church. You want to develop this relationship you have with, you know, a spiritual connection you have with fill in the blank. Okay. Jesus Christ is your Savior. Allah, God. You know, the spaghetti monster. I mean, you know, whatever. Okay. You go do this. And you know, I say spaghetti monster because this is actually an atheist thing. You know, we're the cult of the spaghetti monster or whatever it is. A friend of mine, I mean, he's always pushing that on me. Anyway, so what happens is you go out and you want to develop this relationship or not. Some people seek to avoid it. No, you know, quiet the voices in my head. That's all another issue. But if you believe that there is some kind of a another level of consciousness. There's something else that is guiding. It's your whatever it is. Okay, I believe there is something real that is there that binds us to more than just what's inside our shell. I want the freedom to explore that. I want to be able to, you know, learn from others and have you know, discussions about it. And sometimes we'll do religion on this show, but you know, often I avoid it because it's an opinion. I give you a good example. A good friend of mine, he goes, Ernie is atheist, hardcore. And he goes, Ernie, as long as we can, if you'll admit that God's in your head, you know, then we can, you know, go on something else. I'm going, okay, yeah, of course. Where else would he be? Of course it's in my head, you know? And, you know, if he's anywhere else, well, whatever it is perception in my head anyway. You know, where else would I start looking? And that's one thing that I have a problem. If God is not in your head, where else would he be? You know, I got to go look at, you know, somebody printed on some page or something. He'd be there, but he wouldn't be in my head. I'm like, man, that's, you know, then you know, it might be the wrong one. You know what I mean? So we'll get into that another day. But the point is that you go to church to explore that. You know there's something else or something you want to do. Or you go to an activist group or something, there's something wrong. You know, you want to kind of, you know, test your theories, your hypotheses, you know, with others. You're kind of, yeah, I'm, what do you think? Well, I found this out too. And yeah, I was worried about that. And you kind of come to, well, okay, there's a problem. Is there, you know, anything we can do about it? And what can we do? And the solution. And you start acting. And then you like people and you get relationships and you kind of see where you overlap and you overlook certain things. And pretty soon you're into an organization that you got to be careful. Are you making excuses for the organization to maintain those relationships rather than for the original pursuit that you went there to begin with? You know, the growth that you have spiritually in a personal relationship you have with, you know, whatever's out there, you're exploring that, you're developing it. I mean, it takes time. You know, and a lot of cultures and religion, you know, it takes prayer, it takes meditation. Some maybe even takes pain. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of different ways, you know, whatever. You know, as long as you're not forcing me, you can do whatever you want. So the thing is that as I'm doing this, do I sometimes forget why I was there to begin with? Does that become subservient to the entertainment that I get from, you know, a good speaker? You know, that's just, you know, they got a barbecue afterwards. You know, the kids make friends and get to play. The people, you're making excuses for people that are kind of, you know, they're not quite there. And, you know, but yeah, they're part of your collective. You see what I mean? This happens all the time. I see it at church. You know, I see it at, you know, different organizations. I see it here at Freedom's Phoenix. You know, that's why we don't have a mission other than you get to have your own mission. You know, a lot of people, they don't understand, well, how come this person's here? Did you vet this person? I've heard that before, especially if it comes from the left, okay? You'd be surprised, you know. Did you vet that person? You know, he was saying that, I'm going, no, do I have to? Heck, you don't want me vetting you. You know, so that's not where we're at. That's not how we operate. So what happened today? We're thinking, you know, we had different opportunities for different shows to do and guests and everything. Yesterday I was thinking, I go, you know, it's going to be the last day with Donna and I. You know, I think that we'll take the opportunity for she and I to have a conversation that you get to. And a lot of this stuff we don't talk about. And I never ask her. You know, it's been a long time. We discuss and just do what we each want to do. We have very open dialogue. We have our own friends here at Overlap. Donna. I know this. If Donna asks, we were going to have an event or people come up and do anything. Twice as many people come if Donna asks. I know that. So it's just she has influence. And it really started to become apparent during the revolution, because when I'm on the road a lot, promoting the Ron Paul Revolution and people being active. I mean, that was why I didn't have to promote Ron Paul. He does that all on his own. But I was able to be influential in how people were able to express their support, showing them how easy it was to get coverage. I go, these guys don't have grassroots on the other side. Nobody even cares. Anything that they do have, it's all manufactured and paid for anyway. I go, and if you really support this, right, I'll show you how. You want to get on TV? You want to get some radio coverage? Then do something. We'll talk about it. Do it. You know, they want to go to that meeting. I said, no. This meeting isn't here for us to talk about it. I'm doing. You see this? We got the stencil here. We got the supplies here. We're doing. Oh, I'm sorry. You wore your nice suit? Well, it's going to get paint on it. Okay? Go home and change, or you're just in my way. This is how we operate. It's activist. I take time in the morning. I get up. Donna and I both hit the computers. We start, looking at the stuff. We're, editing and approving other writers and editors and stuff. And Pal Gamble, my senior editor, he's done stuff late the night before. Send out the dispatch. We check, make sure, okay, good, go. Some stuff gets covered. Make sure no big stories are missed and so on. There it is. Then get ready for the show. We do the show. We're back in, between the morning and the afternoon show, doing all kinds of other stuff, activism and meeting with press and doing that kind of stuff, do the afternoon show. Then we're having meetings tonight, we're doing it. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you what we're focusing on and why. Nobody ever asks why. There's a why. And Don and I will share it with you when we come back here and declare your independence.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
That Lunatic Fringe is in here. Donna and I, we got the captains of the Lunatic Fringe. Hello. Now, here in Declare Your Independence, we want to give you the information that you need to just, survive this thing. They keep wanting to kind of give the impression that we know, some super cure that's going to fix it. And a lot of people do. I mean, yesterday we had Joe Buckley. His thing is we just got to get back to the Constitution. Okay. How? I mean, what are we going to do? Well, we got to elect the right people. It's all government computers, man. we're screwed. You think access to billions, hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars, they're just going to, put it up, at the whimsy of the masses? Heck no. When does that ever happen? And if they haven't done it, they're going to do it, and they're on the way to do it, and I think they already done it a long time ago. So, what is the first cure? You can't solve these problems without solving the way people think, or that they do think. I remember one time we used to have a newspaper that we did, a tabloid that had, it was just an activist thing. We published it whenever we had a couple $1,000. We got enough money. Hey, it's time to do it again because we didn't have the internet. It was back in the 90s. And I remember a couple, they, very well off. They're millionaires at the very least. And they said, Ernie, we want to help you. We this is what we want. We're going to buy these banner ads that we want, these display ads in newspapers so that we can give you money, because we can't. Okay. What did it have? It was just a big box, and it just had the word think. Throughout the paper, think. Think. And I asked him why, and he goes, that was an ad campaign. I think it was an IBM thing or something back in the 60s, 70s or something. It just had a big impact on them. When they were young, it was just think. Okay, I'll think about what? TV's not on. I'm brain dead. I can't think. There's no TV. Tell me what to think. Did you take an opportunity to think for a second? I had to cough. Anyway, so what happens is we have so many people that, but they're such a small minority. There's such a teeny weeny number of people that are thinking. Well, a lot of times what they substitute for thinking is parroting. You just regurgitate whatever, you know, somebody said. You know, like Rush Limbaugh's, you know, or Hannity or something. Man, he'd give you a good kind of reasoned thing that's only, but it's two-dimensional. It's one layer. You know, the hate is because of freedom, you know what I mean? And you go, yeah, well, the hate is because of, what is there, some study you got there or something? Then Dr. Paul running for president, Giuliani and his book things, and Charles and I did shows on this. You have the Dying to Win. There's a book that he goes, look, I went and studied, asked all these people, go around the world and talking to these groups that would do these things. Most of the suicide bombers were, I think it was in Sri Lanka, and they're not even Muslim. You know, it had nothing to do with, you know, Islamofascism. It was because they were occupied. You know, you take away anybody's future, I mean, they're gonna get theirs. You know, it's a human nature thing, I guess. I wonder if it's, you know, been going on throughout history. I would suspect so. You know, the book, you know, was very, you know, keen on that, saying, look, you know, this is as far back as we can go. This is what happens. You occupy people, they get ornery to the point that they're willing to sacrifice themselves. Okay? We got that to deal with. So now we have thinking, you know, has been introduced to our culture. And you're allowed to think, come up with a solution or a conclusion, and express it until they're saying, nah, you can't. So what do we have on Freedom's Phoenix today? The Guardian, one of the big papers in London, they're not allowed. The Guardian gagged from reporting on Parliament. The Guardian has been prevented from reporting parliamentary proceedings on legal grounds, which appear to call into question privileges guaranteeing free speech established under the 1688 Bill of Rights. So, you know, this been going, that's what Magna Carta was all about. They go to the king and say, guess what? You know, your brains or your signature is going to be on this paper. I mean, that's pretty much how it went. You go to the National Archives in Washington, D.C., and you'll see, you know, the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and Magna Carta. They had a display of it up there. One thing that was kind of surprised me is the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, especially the Declaration of Independence, kind of struck me, was how faded it was. I mean, you could barely make it out. And it disturbed me, you know, and that they would put so much of a shrine around something that, I mean, it's just, you know, hemp paper. I mean, you know, it's just a piece of paper. That is not where I get my, you know, it's not like it radiates something. You know, it was nice that you get to go see it and so on to keep it in low light so it doesn't. And I'm going, you know, but yeah, and they will cradle this thing like it, you wouldn't believe it. They'll have the national U.S. government will unlimited resources to wrap and protect and this because they need it. You know, not only do they wrap themselves in a bright, shiny new flag, they'll wrap themselves in a Declaration of Independence as if it was theirs, as if it justified their existence. You know, would I feel better if it went to Sotheby's and was sold to someone that would appreciate it more? You know, what do I care? You know, I'm like, pay off national debt. You know, it's I don't hold to things like that, you know, but the concept and the words, yeah, they're, yeah, I think it's been copied enough. We're good. You know, I don't think we're going to lose it. So I'm when we come back, we'll get to it. You know, we'll have a conversation with Donna, but I wanted to play also some of these clips of why we're doing this. It helps us explain it. We'll get to it in the longer segment when we get back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we're back in the saddle again. I got some goodies for you here. I'm going to go ahead and push the button. Yep, we're going to put up some stuff for today's archive show. So you'll have this stuff, you know, it's good information for you, you know, and it's easier for you to share. I give you a URL link to what we're doing, and then you just go there and you forward that link to your friends, and they have all the information. We categorize it. You know, I tell you, the reason we did Freedom's Phoenix the way we did was because there was just so much information. I was doing radio. I could not possibly get. I mean, if I just read headlines of all the stuff that just the headlines and a quick summary of what was going on, I couldn't even get to a tenth of it. It was just it was impossible. There's so much stuff that but it supports a single thing. And it was easier for me and for I think for the audience to encourage them to go do what they needed to do to get, you know, informed or protect themselves with information. But, you know, you had to understand what it was you're in support of or against. I mean, if you don't get it, man, you're just a tool of the machine. Now, they'll just, you know, show pretty colors and flashing lights and neon signs, and you're like, yeah, I follow you. What would he say? Oh, yeah, whatever he said. You know, this is what's going on. You know, we know it. So, I'm going to play for you. This is just yesterday. Robert Kennedy Jr., you know, one of the Kennedys, he's a younger guy, and he's had a show on Air America. I remember him doing a progressive show with some. So he's definitely left. I mean, he's a Kennedy, you know. But he sees what's going on. I mean, you know, these guys, they're not in a vacuum. And a lot of times when you got your own cash, you know, you're kind of, you know, you're open to ideas. There's something going on here. And he took the time to really start to investigate these vaccines. And over the months, years, he's taken a look, and he also, you know, has talked to the scientists. You know, what do they say? All right, give me, I'm Congressman, what's his name? You know, don't be messing with me, you know. And it's got to the point to where they had a rally on the Capitol lawn, and he came out to speak, and they had this. And it's probably a 20-minute speech or something, but we'll just do the first few minutes here just to give you an idea of what they know. I mean, Congress knows. And he's doing this speech to make sure they're in Capitol Hill, all people, make sure. Man, don't be telling me you don't know. Okay? This is what they know.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to see all of you out here today, finally telling the truth to this Congress, which needs to hear the truth for the first time. The government scientists are acknowledging that even tiny infinitesimal amounts of mercury, parts per billion, will cause profound neurological injury in children. And I was working on these issues, and mothers started coming up to me and said, you know, the biggest exposure is not coming from power plants or old mining claims, as you might think. It's coming from our own vaccines. And they asked me to work on it and to look into it. And they were not hysterical people. They were scientists. They were doctors. They were psychiatrists. They were pharmacists. They were people who had their feet on the ground. They had attended the conferences. They had read the scientific literature. They had calmly and deliberately gone through this, and they had reached a conclusion. And the conclusion was that the vaccines were destroying the health, were making the sickest generation of American children in the history of our country. And I started looking into it, and somebody provided me with the Simpsonwood memo, which I then published in Rolling Stone. And Simpsonwood was the transcripts of a secret meeting that was held between CDC and 75 representatives of the vaccine industry, in which they reviewed a report that CDC had ordered, the Verstraten study, of the 100,000 children in the United States Vaccine Safety Database. And when they looked at it themselves, they said, it is impossible, this is a quote, to massage this data to make the signal go away. There is no denying that there is a connection between autism and thimerosal in the vaccines. And they said, and this is what they said. I didn't say this. This is what they, their own scientists and their own conclusion of the best doctors, the top people at CDC, the top people at the pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, when they had this meeting, they had it not in Atlanta, which was the headquarters of the CDC, but in Simpsonwood at a private conference center, because they believed that that would make them able to insulate themselves from requests under the Freedom of Information Law, and they would not have to disclose the transcripts of these meetings to the public. Somebody transcribed the meetings, and we were able to get a hold of it. But you have them talking about the Verstraten study and saying there's a clear link, not just with autism, but with a whole range of neurological disorders. Speech delay, language delay, all kinds of learning disorders, ADD, hyperactivity disorder, and the injection of these vaccines. And they could tell because, as you know, vaccine protocols were dramatically increased. When I was a little boy, we only got 3 vaccines. But my children, 5 of my 6 children, got 22 vaccines beginning in 1989. That's the thimerosal generation. That's the vaccine generation. And it's the sickest generation in the history of this country. And I looked at these, I read, and I was astonished. Because I have worked on environmental issues for 25 years. And I know what captive agency phenomena is. It's the dynamic by which the regulatory agencies become captured by the industries they're supposed to regulate. And there's all kinds of mechanisms that encourage that or provoke that or promote that to happen. But I was shocked because I know many of these people in CDC. And I know the people in the FDA. And I know that when they entered those agencies, they entered it with a good heart, intending to do the right thing. But something had corrupted them. They got sucked into a vortex because they made decisions that were wrong. And then instead of admitting it to the public, they covered it up to protect themselves. And it was very clear. And then I got a hold of the correspondence between the doctors and between CDC, rebuking each other and saying, why didn't we look at this? Why didn't somebody do a mass loading before we did these, approve these protocols with 22 vaccines to these children? Why didn't we do this? Rebuking themselves, rebuking each other. And then the Simpson-Wood transcripts, after the first maybe 2 hours in which they are talking about the undeniability of the connection between autism and thimerosal, the impossibility of massaging the data further in order to try to eliminate those signals. That's what they spend the first 2 hours. The rest of the meeting they spend talking about how do we hide this from the press, from the public, and what they call the predatory bar. All the lawyers out there who may represent people who were injured by their negligence. And at the end of that meeting, they make a few decisions. One is for Stratton, the man who designed, who conducted the study, is hired the next day by GlaxoSmithKline and shipped off to Switzerland. And 6 months later, he sends in a redesigned study that includes cohorts that are predictably, who are too young to have been diagnosed as autistic. So he loads the study down, the data down, and they tell the public that they've lost all the original data. This is what CDC says till this day, that it does not know what happened to the original data in the Verstraten study. And they published this other study that is a corrupt and crooked, what we call tobacco science, done by a bunch of biostitutes of crooked scientists who are trying to fool the American public. Then Kathleen Stratton from CDC and IOM says what we need is we need some studies that will disprove the link. So they work with the vaccine industry to gin up the 4 phony European studies that are done by vaccine industry employees, funded by the vaccine industry, and published in the American Academy of Pediatrics magazine, which receives 80% of its revenue from the vaccine industry. And none of these scientists disclose any of their myriad conflicts, which conventional ethics rules require them to do. It's not disclosed. And these studies, and you know, I've made a profession of reading phony science, of junk science, of tobacco science, because I see it every day. I've sued over 400 polluters, and this is how they defend themselves. They hire these phony scientists, they produce these phony reports, so I know how to read them. So I did something that not a single member, you see the press here and all there, not a single member of this press corps, I can guarantee you, has ever read any of those studies. It has not happened. What they read was the CDC's description of those studies, which has nothing to do with what's in the studies. And you need to read these studies, and I'm talking to you guys, and you need to read them critically. And that woman, I called that woman who wrote that Time magazine article. And I called the editor of the Washington Post when they said, oh, they, you know, this is the newest mythology. Well, they've removed the thimerosal from the vaccines, and autism rates have not gone down. How many times have you read that repeated by these people from the press? That is an industry talking point that the industry knows is a lie. Everybody knows that's a lie. The amount of thimerosal today in the flu vaccines is about 60% of what they claim to have removed from all the other pediatric vaccines.
So you start to get the gist. I mean, this is, and there's another part of the speech. Maybe we'll play it later in the show, but I'm... Wow. You know, this is stuff that we know. You know, how do you think, if it took this long for Robert Kennedy Jr., congressman, to know this and go through and research this, and, you know, who you think told him to do it? It was his constituents. It was people, you know, it's good that he had a sympathetic ear. He actually started going through this because he had been involved in environmental issues before, you know, in the tobacco industry. And so he knows how the system works. You know, we just need a rubber stamp from the man to say it's okay for us to pollute the peoples and make a lot of money at it. So he's, this is not secret information. A lot of us know this. So what do you do about it? You know, it's so entrenched that you just suck it up. Now, a lot of these vaccines, and so we had a gentleman, Michael Anthony, who's the author of Mass Casualties, and it's a book about him being a medic in Iraq. And there's a story in there that he and one of his friends in the medical unit that he was in, there was a third of them wouldn't get the vaccines. And they threatened him with them. I mean, they'd go, time of war, boy, we can shoot and kill you. The 20-year-old kid, you got a 40-year-old gruffy colonel going, I'll just shoot you where you stand, boy. You know, and you go, yeah, well, we had fragging. I'll shoot you where you stand, buddy. You know, I have my gun with me more. But the what happened was, it goes all the way to the end, and in the end, he didn't want me to tell the story, but he came out all right. You know, he came out all right on the deal. Him and one of his friends in the medical unit, they're good. So buy the book. But what happened was is that they needed to get rid of the anthrax. It was an anthrax vaccine that was left over from Gulf War I. It was reaching the end of its shelf life, and they needed to clear the shelves. There's no threat of anthrax. There's more casualties from the vaccine than there was from anything else. But they didn't care. That wasn't their goal. Their goal was to get rid of the vaccines. They're doing the same thing now. They're restocking. We got a contract, man, and we got to get rid of it. And I'll bet you this H1N1, the swine flu, whatever the heck they're going to call it, I can just relabel it. I don't know. They'll call it something else. You know, they don't even get to the point that this thing was manufactured by men anyway. You know, it was a weaponized version of, you know, what? It's a human, swine, and avian mix. Man, we're going to get some potent. You know, we're going to make sure you got to get a vaccine now. You know, did you think, I don't know, how about I just eat right? You know, maybe I'll go that way. And then what happens when you do get it? What's the casualty rates? They're like, none. You know, you think nutrition might have had something to do with, you know, all the plagues that we have and so on. And then now we're getting a whole nother issue about the nutrition value of all these genetically altered foods and stuff, and how, you know, where Monsanto comes in and how they did the exact same thing that Robert Kennedy Jr. was talking about. Is Monsanto comes in and just takes over the government along with, you know, it's like, I've been to these. I mean, if you have not, they've even done TV specials on this before. We go in the halls of Congress, and literally there are lines of lobbyists. It is so bad that the lobbyists for different industries pay people to stand in line for them. Now, these young kids, interns, here, your job, they get paid to stand there. They get 10, 15 bucks an hour just to stand there to hold the place for when it's the lobbyist's turn to get in there so they can give the congressman some money. You think I'm kidding? You know, this is how it's done. So what do we do? Let's get informed. You know, but what happens when you're a young couple? Like, Don, we have other young couples that are around here that we look at, we're friends with. We have them come over for dinner, you know, once a week or so. We have some of these guys come over. And we help them just like we were helped by people that we associated with that were our age now. You know, this is a passed-on generation thing. There were Ernie and Donna Hancock's, you know, by the name of, you know, somebody else, you know, before. You know, it's Rick and Kathy and Mike and Tracy and, you know, Peter and Tony. And, you know, it's, I mean, you know, it's just there's so many of these people. There's a long line that we have it's not even really a responsibility or obligation or a duty that's the motivation. It's in your own self-interest to take this accumulated information, resources, and what you know and pass it on to the next generation. I don't need them to agree with me. Just understand, this is how we got, because everybody's got their own, especially young people. I have four kids, you know, from 19 to 24, and I'm telling you, you know, they're going to do whatever they're going to do. And they'll tell you all about it, too, you know. And so you got to let them. You just give them the information. You know, this is what to watch out for. You know, okay, you're going to go to the biker bar. Well, you know, when the guns start coming out and the guy's all drunk and staggering and breaking bottles on the bar, it's time to leave. You know, I mean, FYI, just, you know, letting you know this. You know, what do you say? You can't go. Well, what does that mean? You know, they're going to go. You know, so you got to supply them with the information. Well, that's what we do. So the people come down and we'll have a big meeting tonight, and you'll have at least, I guarantee this, as much press as we've gotten here around the state, I'll guarantee that there is at least two different agencies represented by some infiltrators that come. Guarantee it. You welcome them when they come in, you know, because they're always, I'd be disappointed if they weren't. And maybe give them some information, too. When we come back, you know, we'll play the clip, you know, that you need to hear about, you know, what they did in Tucson, you know. And then we'll get into, in the next hour, for sure, we'll get into the conversation between Donna and I, and you can share. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we all want to change the world, you know, and to what? I don't know, to, you know, not be, like, mean. You know, there's this justice thing. They always go, well, there's justice. You know, we got to have social justice. And then somebody else gets to define what that is. But, they're right. I'll tell you where they're right. Whenever you have a situation to where there is an injustice, you'll have the peasants rise up. I mean, they'll rise up against, you know, the property owners or the kleptocracy that's regulatory agencies or what. I mean, but they rarely do they, you know, do it in a pure. They're just like, somebody took or I don't got and they got more of. I want mine. It's really not based on any main principle. That hasn't really happened that well since the American Revolution. You know, that was a unique opportunity based around an informed populace, a philosophy that was well articulated, that people understood. What did they do? You know, Thomas Paine, common sense, saying, look, let me tell you what this whole thing is about. You know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned. And then they showed up with copies of Thomas Paine's book on the battlefield and said, yeah, what he said. So we have been involved, Donna and I have been involved in this for 20 years, and it has been a labor of necessity. And it's not because we have any great affinity to, you know, just be out here fighting. We got things we want to do. We got family that we want to. We want to spend time with. We got we take time off to do that very thing. And you know, and the kids, they you know, we don't want to talk about it. You know, not everything has to do with, you know, the evil government. So we don't. And then they come to us. All of a sudden, you know, you have four kids and their spouses and girlfriends and kids and everything. All of a sudden, they're coming to you saying, "Hey, Dad, did you know?" You know, I'm going, "Yeah, you know, welcome to our world." So we're in a situation now that we are going to kind of focus on one thing because it applies to all of us immediately. Right now, our grandchildren being born, our own personal health, that of our neighbors, our country, we are being invaded. I mean, there's all kinds of threats that they're out there. They're going to kind of, and here it comes, and Congress, and a lot of that stuff. I just, yeah, whatever. I just buy more rice and toilet paper, and, you know, and you do whatever. You're going to fall on your own. But when it comes to them using the force of government to mandate injecting me with something, I'm like, you know, wow. Man, if I didn't make it myself on my stove, maybe I don't want it. You know, I sure as heck don't want it coming from government. You know, I mean, if that isn't the scariest thing right there, you want, you know, we're not afraid here and declare your independence except people taking funky stuff and putting it in my body. You know, I'd be afeared. So I'm, you know, just, but in the next hour, Donna and I, we're going to, and she's not used to this. She's like, I got to talk. I don't want to talk. But, you know, you get to know her, and we'll get to know her together. Because a lot of this stuff, you know, she's, you know, she's pretty quiet and just happy to help and do whatever. We're going to let her go on because she has an opinion. I think you might be interested in it. I know I am. You know, she works hard. She does her own things with her friends here. While we're on the air, the great sign holder, Jean, Ducati Jean, because she, you know, has a Ducati she rides sometimes too. But she works in the legal profession, and she she cannot pass a corner without holding a sign. Puts a great deal of effort in here because she remembers protesting anti-war in the 60s. Late 60s, early 70s, her and her husband, they experienced the same kind of stuff. They don't want it to happen again on their watch with their children either. There's a lot of us like that. We'll talk about it when we come back.